So you see, I have no relationships to disclose. I'm the executive director of a private nonprofit, and we are really just beholden to our mission, which is to expand dental care to low-income children and pregnant women across the state of Minnesota. Whoops. All right, what do I do to make this go forward? Just there we go. Oh, dear. This is the end of my presentation, so I can just cut to the chase here. But yeah, I don't know what happened there. Sorry, guys. Usually my 7-year-old boy stands next to me and shows me how to do. All right, perfect. Thank you. All right. So Children's Dental Services is, as I said, a private nonprofit. We've been around a long time, since 1919. And the reason I'm here today is not because dental therapy is just for children in Minnesota, but I happen to be part of the Safety Net Coalition that was at the table and passed the dental therapy legislation that we have in Minnesota, and I employed the first dental therapist. So we're really kind of pioneering the effort to integrate dental therapists into the workforce in Minnesota. Little bit more about who we are. We, in the 1960s, became the first provider of Head Start-based dental care in the nation, and we've quadrupled in size since 2000. When I came on in the year 2000, we were serving around 4,000 kids per year. In 2012, over 30,000. It looks like now in 2013, it'll be around between 34,000 and 35,000 children and pregnant women that we serve annually. And we're the state's primary provider of on-site care in schools and Head Starts. We do that through a portable care program, not a mobile van, but actually bringing portable sets of equipment into school-based settings. And this is actually here a photograph of that happening in Duluth, Minnesota. One of the hallmarks of our program is that we really work on providing culturally based care. And so a lot of folks think that Minnesota, you know, diversity in Minnesota means that you're either Swedish or Norwegian. But in fact, Minnesota has the second largest population of Somalis outside of Mogadishu, and the second largest population of Hmong in the United States outside of California. We have really strong refugee and resettlement programs, and the folks that we serve, you know, over 82% of them are recent immigrants, refugees, people of color, or speak a language other than English as their primary language. We also have a number of other special care programs for the blind, deaf, disabled, folks who are autistic, et cetera. Again, we use portable equipment. We explored the idea of providing care in a big van or small sets of equipment in schools, and we really find that co-locating the equipment and really being able to be next to other services and in Minnesota in a warm place makes a huge difference in how we provide the care. This is the map of our service area, and I just want to echo what Dr. Willard has said. We're successfully providing care across Minnesota. We're in the process of bringing our dental therapist into northeastern Minnesota, so what we call the little arrowhead up in the top right corner. And what we have in Minnesota, in the Twin Cities, it's the 17th largest metropolitan area in the United States. And up in northeastern Minnesota, it's the largest tract of wilderness in the lower 48. And so if we can do it, you can do it too, as she says. Again, these are the barriers that we work on eliminating: transportation by bringing our care directly to the places where low-income communities congregate, culturally targeted care, not just translated, but we also work on really having culturally targeted oral health curriculum. And we accept all forms of insurance or no insurance at all. We're the only community clinic in Minnesota that I know of that actually has a zero baselining scale. And last year, we wrote off $4 million in free care. These are just examples of some of the folks who work with us. On our left is our dental director, Dr. Fong Do. And on the right is Zara Babi, who is one of our Somali assistants. So thinking of all of these unmet needs in our community, we really started to look for a way that we could think outside of the box in terms of expanding care. We know that we actually have a shortage of dentists in Minnesota, but the dentists that we do have largely are unwilling to accept medical assistance. Minnesota pays 47 out of 50 states in terms of Medicaid reimbursements, very low Medicaid reimbursements. You all know this already. You know, as of one of the last counts, more than 52 million hours of school hours are lost annually to dental disease. So how can we get at this problem? And we had tried some other things in Minnesota. As I said, I'm part of the Safety Net Coalition, and we looked at foreign-trained dentist legislation, and we looked at a lot of expanded functions. And these things kind of were just really making a little dent, and we realized that we needed more of a systems change. And when we looked at dental therapy, it just made sense. The pool of dental therapists that we could employ would be community-based, more continuously present than our scarce dentists. And we felt that coming from the sort of background that the legislation was targeting, that they would more naturally engage patients and integrate preventive care and education into visits. And another thing that we hoped would happen, and I'll sort of show you later on, has happened, is freeing dentists to practice at the top of their license. So a little bit about the characteristics of ADTs and DDTs and DTs in Minnesota. Many of you have probably heard this, and it is a very confusing thing about Minnesota. We have two tracks. So the advanced dental therapist in Minnesota is a hygiene-based provider who comes out of the Metropolitan State University program. And that provider can do her or his full scope of hygiene functions if they're licensed, as well as their advanced dental therapy functions. And they have a broader scope of services that they can provide. And most importantly, they can provide them independently of the dentist. They work in a collaborative management agreement, but they can work out in the community independently. Currently in Minnesota, the dental therapy track provided by the University of Minnesota was a program that ended in a four-year bachelor's degree, but does involve a more restricted set of restorative procedures, but the provider can only work in the same building as the dentist. And I, just to be clear about that, the University of Minnesota, after going through a couple of rounds of graduates, has realized that it was really tough for those dental therapy grads to get a job. And I really would say it's not about the scope of service. It's not necessarily because they don't do hygiene-based work. It's because primarily, if you got a shortage of dentists and you have to have a dentist in the building with that dental therapist, it's not going to really help us solve our problem. So again, that's being changed right now. We at Children's Dental Services support both, and we employ both. One other word before I get into sort of the specific procedures. Our dental therapists in Minnesota, both from both programs, can practice in an array of communities. One of the primary requirements is that the study in which they work must serve 50% or more people of poverty. But there are other communities that qualify, including schools, Head Start centers, VA hospitals, and other public health programs. So these are some of the procedures performed by the ADT and include some of their preventive procedures. These are just giving you a look at some of the first ADTs in Minnesota. Probably, you know, the well-known rock star of ADT grads in Minnesota is Christy Jo Fogarty on the lower left. You may have seen her on Frontline or testifying nationally. But she was the first, not only part of the first graduating class, but the first to actually go through the licensure and credentialing process successfully in Minnesota, and has now been working out in the community independently for about 10 months. Elizabeth Frank on the right is actually our senior hygienist. She's been working as a hygienist for 20 years and graduated from the program this June. We put her through the program. And our first dental therapist is also the first Hmong restorative provider that we've ever been able to hire. And that's another exciting piece, as Dr. Willard said, that having this dental therapy track, particularly the track that takes folks post-high school with some prerequisites, it really enables us to hire from the communities that we serve more than we had been able to before, and that's really exciting. I mentioned earlier that I would say that, you know, one of the things, the legislation in Minnesota was very controversial, and one piece that really helped us to get it through, and people ask me a lot, why did you do that? Why did you do this? And it's kind of what we had to do to get it to pass. It was this collaborative management agreement piece, and at first, I personally thought this would be an onerous tool. It's the development of this specialized agreement between the dentist and the dental therapist that actually can restrict the scope of practice, and I was a little nervous about that. In fact, this has been a very useful tool. At my own public health clinic, had a number of dentists who were naysayers about this program. And so when we could sit down and say, hey, guess what? You've got this agreement. You can target it. If you just want to allow this very limited scope of restorative procedures, if you don't want to allow extractions, no problem. We can target it to begin with. And I will say that all of the dentists who work for me who started out restricting the procedures have now lifted all restrictions. A lot of them say, well, it's only going to be this way with Christy Jo, or it's only going to be this way with Elizabeth. But once you really get to know that dental therapist, and you see them in action, you see the quality of care, they're not, it's demystified, and there's been really good acceptance. I have only 5 minutes, so I'm going to start to talk a little faster here. As pioneers of our program, we've had to go through a lot that we didn't necessarily anticipate. Credentialing and billing has been tricky. I've learned that changing a system with an insurance company is very difficult, but we're getting there. A big kind of hiccup and fear on the part of dentists was malpractice, who's going to be responsible if things go wrong. We were able to get a new kind of malpractice insurance policy from Marsh for the ADT scope or the ADT model. And I always like to look at what actuarialists are thinking, because they think the risk is $93 per year. And they think the risk for a dentist is on average $775, you know, more than eight times that. So that's kind of interesting. Looking at sort of the diversity of Minnesota geographically, we do use teledentistry to connect our remote services. So that's another kind of tool in your toolbox. I hesitate to make it a requirement of dental therapy legislation because it can be expensive and difficult. And we've even found in some remote areas of Minnesota, we're having a difficult time getting a signal. But it is a tool. We are working with HRSA in our implementation of this program, and that's gratifying. We know that there's interest in the work that we're doing. Because it's been so successful for us, we do provide a tuition assistance and reimbursement program to encourage more of our staff or others in the community to go through the program. And folks often ask me, well, what does it actually cost? So The average cost of Minnesota dental school, this is from their website, $256,000 total over 4 years, not including the four-year bachelor degree prerequisite. Average cost for Metropolitan State University dental therapy program for a master's degree, $35,000, does require the four-year hygiene degree as a prerequisite. The average cost of the University of Minnesota dental therapy program resulting in a bachelor's degree, $65,600 for a little over 2 years, requiring 1 year of prereqs. So that just sort of gives you an idea. So how is this provider fitting into the dental team? I'm going to kind of fast forward to how things are doing. I guess there's one little quote I want to point out that one of our dentists who was really concerned at first is saying that the primary ADT who she supervises is doing fillings better than she is. And I think we're sort of seeing that. There's this whole repetition piece. If there are 50 competencies in the scope of practice that we really focus on in children's oral health, those are the 50 that our dental therapists are trained in, and they do them over and over and over, and they develop an efficiency, an expertise, a speed, a quality that we frankly, in no respect to my dentist friends, I mean, no disrespect, men, but we see a greater efficiency there. This is just a little more information about who they're focusing on. We're finding now advanced dental therapist is spending 80% of her time or more out in the communities. We really do have a need out in community settings. Here are some other examples of successful integration in Minnesota. We are one of several community clinics and even private practices who have embraced the models of Apple Tree Dental, Health Partners, Hennepin County Medical Center, Main Street Dental Care, and another who recently joined, and I need to add to the list, is the first FQHC in Minnesota to join. So we've been really counting the data carefully. We count it via our Dentrix computerized program management system, and we also hand count it because we want to really know what's going on. We're looking at number of miles patients travel to appointments, diversity of patients, emergency appointments, special needs, and then just sort of all the basic, you know, how many served, what kinds of procedures, et cetera. So here's what our production looked like in August 2011. This is pre-dental therapy. And this is our production in August 2012, where we had a dental therapist who were going through their 2,000 hours of clinical time, which they had to do in order to become licensed and credentialed with the state. So in yellow are the two, and you can see they're right up there. They're holding their own. They're not the lowest provider, and one of them is in the top half. And then this is about a year later, July 2013. And interestingly, this tracks at that time. Some folks are out at any given time. I might have a dentist on maternity leave or whatever. So at this particular time, I have ADT01. Who's number four in terms of productivity, and then DT01, who is number eight. You're seeing that, you know, the DTs and the ADTs both are holding their own. And overall, production went up for the whole group. That's another fascinating part. So for us, the financial impact, if we pay a dentist $75 per hour and a dental therapist on average $45 per hour, we're saving $1,200 a week or $62,400 per year for each of our dental therapists of full-time staff. So just to kind of summarize a few things that we've learned, I mentioned kind of the main one, which was that the dental therapy program with the restrictions on practice, the requirement of having a dentist in the same facility, has been difficult and is being changed. That's kind of the primary thing that we've come out with after looking at this for a couple of years. The ability to do preventive care in school-based settings is really useful for us. I don't think it's essential for everybody, but it's a piece that's useful for us as a school-based program that focuses on kids' care. Again, the ability to practice under general supervision, allowing flexibility and freeing up clinical space at our headquarters is the most key thing that we need to be working on, and which is why the University of Minnesota is implementing the new track, which is not a hygiene-based track. And the quality of care has been really outstanding. So with that, thank you so much, and I'll turn it over.